can be loving, they can be fearless, they can be bold and strong, they can provide, they can protect, they can push us to be better people. Dads can be amazing. But dads sometimes aren't that great. Dads are also broken people. Dads can be harsh and they can be unforgiving. Dads can be sarcastic, they can be selfish and sanctimonious. Dads can be alcoholics, they can be angry, and they can be absent. Dads come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, with all sorts of different backgrounds, different personalities, different wirings and makeups. And all of us will come to a day like today with a different story about our dad. And what I want to do today on Father's Day is explore the spiritual journey of the man. The spiritual journey of every man as he navigates his way through the different phases and stages of life, and including those who are so blessed to be fathers. I believe that this message that I've got today will be helpful for both men and women. It'll be helpful for the men here to help understand what the spiritual journey it is that we go on. It will be helpful for the women because I believe that it will give you some insight into what is happening for the significant men that are in your life, and therefore how you can perhaps best support and encourage them. Now, the Apostle Paul, a very famous character in the New Testament, in fact, perhaps the most instrumental person in the establishment of the early church outside of God and the Holy Spirit. Paul wrote a number of letters, and he wrote two letters to a protege of his by the name of Timothy. Funnily enough, these two letters are called 1 and 2 Timothy. And when Paul wrote 2 Timothy, he was in jail in Rome. And it was at a time when the Emperor Nero was in control of things, and Paul had probably been in jail for some time when he was writing this letter, up to about 4 years, we think. And he knows that as he's writing these words to in 2 Timothy, that things are actually looking pretty bleak for him, because the Emperor Nero is on a murderous rampage, persecuting and killing Christians every day. And Paul knows that his death is probably imminent because he's locked up in jail. He's in a dungeon, in chains. And it's in this spot that he's writing this second letter to Timothy, and he's in a reflective mood. He's reflecting back on his life, on all the achievements of his life, of the successes and the failures, and he writes these words in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 6 to 8. And he says this, "For I am already being poured out like a drink offering, for the time of my departure is near. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I've kept the faith. And now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing." Now today I particularly want to focus on verse 7 of this passage. I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. Paul was reflecting back on his life. He was reflecting back on his brokenness, the fact that he once had been a murderer of Christians himself. He was reflecting on his successes and joys, that after he met with Jesus on the road to Damascus, he became responsible for the establishment of the church throughout Asia Minor, and there was amazing successes in that. He was reflecting on some of his joys of the people that he met and the relationships that he built, but also his sorrows of the broken and the fractured relationships with others, the people that he'd left behind. He was reflecting on the hardships, the shipwrecks, the persecutions, the beatings, all of that. And he says these words, "I've given it my all. I fought the good fight." His faith was intact. "I've kept the faith." And he knows that at this point, there's a legacy that he's leaving behind, a legacy that's going to continue on even once he's gone. Now, in a few months' time, I'm turning 46. I don't like saying that very much. And I'm faced with the reality, and it sort of hit me, if I'm being really honest, over the last year or so, that I'm not getting any younger. Now, yesterday I went for a bike ride, And it's something I like to do. I like riding, but I've had a bit of a winter hiatus on the bike. I don't ride during winter because it's too cold and it's not fun. Has to be fun. But the weather's starting to turn, so it's time to get out on the bike. But I'm not very fit, so I'm riding along and I'm riding up a hill and I was pushing into a really strong wind yesterday morning. It was quite breezy and there was a strong wind that I had to ride into. But I thought I was doing okay. You know, I was puffing and panting and it was hard work, but I was progressing. It was all good. And I got to this hill and I'm riding up this hill. And behind me comes this bike rider, a young woman, in fact. And she just went past me, shot past me, straight up that hill. Now, I tried to follow her. I thought, well, let's see if I can hang on here. And I tried to follow her, because competitive instinct kicks in and you can't help yourself. So I'm pushing harder. And I'm looking down at my pedals, watching my legs go as hard as they could. And I'm tired, but I'm going really hard. And then I look up and she's basically gone, way off into the distance. There's no chance. I couldn't keep up. Now, admittedly, I'm not as fit at the moment as I could be on the bike because I haven't been riding much. And I know that the more I ride, the fitter I'll get. But I couldn't help but think at the time that a few years ago that wouldn't have happened. As I get older, I'm finding that my body physically can't do what it once could. And the recovery from any exertion, such as going for a bike ride, is actually taking longer. I'm sorer the next day and the day after. Now, this is all a bit sad, really, but it's inevitability of life, but I'm noticing that it's not only physical changes that are happening for me. There's actually some changes that are happening at this time spiritually as well, and it's what I want to explore today is these spiritual changes as we men navigate our way through these different stages and phases of life. Now, unlike the physical changes, these spiritual changes, if we embrace them, are actually welcomed and are really good for us men. So what I want to do is explore our own spiritual journey as men and how we as men can be fighting the good fight, how we can finish that race and we can keep the faith. There's this really interesting study that's been done of 49 different men in the Bible. And the reason it's 49 men is because these were the number of men that they could work out where they had enough information on these particular men that they had their whole life stories from birth right through till death, and their spiritual journeys were described. 49 men in the Bible who this occurred to. And of these 49 men, only 30% of them were like Paul here that could say, I've kept the faith. I've kept going. I'm running to the finish line. Only 30%. The other 70%, according to this particular analysis, were either walking to the line, they were limping to the line, or they'd been disqualified from the race altogether. Now, further study has revealed that this figure is roughly true of all historical church leaders, and it's roughly true of all current day ministers and key volunteer church leaders as well. Only 30% finish well. Now, my goal is to be in that 30%. I want to be one who every day, every year, lives for Jesus and finishes running the race. Not walking, not limping, not disqualified, but I want to run. Now, there was a Franciscan monk by the name of Richard Rohr. And he's written extensively about the male spiritual journey. And on the screen behind me is a diagram. And it's a diagram that I've adapted from the work of Richard Rohr. And what I'm going to do with the rest of our time that we have this morning is go quite deeply into this diagram that you see behind me. I want to recognize a couple of things right from the start, though. And that is that there's always a danger in generalizations, and every single one of us is unique. And so we need to recognize, first of all, that we're all on a unique journey, and though this diagram and that which I'm about to explain does make some generalizations, we are all unique. But what I've worked out as I've gone quite deeply into this, not just in my own experience, but also almost 20 years of pastoral ministry, is that there's a lot about this that rings true. And so it's worth considering. Now, also want to say that Richard Rohr has written extensively and I believe very helpfully on the spiritual journey of the female. But because today's Father's Day, our focus is on men and the topic of females. We'll have to wait for another time, perhaps. So this diagram describes three stages of the spiritual journey of the male. And the first stage, which Richard Rohr identifies as the ascent journey, and he says it's for young men aged 1 to 32. I'm not quite sure why he made it 32, but let's just take it as that, perhaps with a few years either side. And this is the ascent journey. It's the journey that a man goes on in discovering himself, working out who he is, what his identity is, how he best ticks, discovering his strengths and all of his gifts. Now, this ascent occurs in a really healthy way when the young man is able to experience his own power and his own possibilities. With the ascent journey, it's often marked by a necessary egotism and also an idealism. The focus is very much for the young man on working out, these are the values that I want to live by, that I want to live my life by. But in his idealism, he'll often have very strong views. Black and white worldview. He knows what he knows, and he's very sure about what he knows, and he knows that what he knows is both right and true. The ascent journey is marked by a striving, as it were, for achievement, and that often sacrifices are made by the man for success to occur. Now, this is usually, though not always, demonstrated in the career choice of the young man as he strives to get ahead and achieve in his particular area of focus. Now, the goal of the ascent journey for the young man who wants to follow Jesus is that he grows into his strength, his gifting, and his power, but with an appropriate sense of boundaries and a growing awareness that his strength is best demonstrated in a selflessness, a putting others first. The major spiritual focus of the ascent journey is on the young man learning what it means to follow the ways of Jesus. Now, there's an unfortunate alternative to the journey of ascent for the young man, and this occurs when the young man is never able or rarely able to experience his own power, goodness, and potential. And often this will occur when there's a lack of positive older male figures in the young man's life, where he experiences either abuse or neglect, and the young man starts to realize his own strength, but in an unhealthy way, and he acts out. He becomes the angry young man. Now, we see this in our society today. The most common perpetrators of violent crimes towards others are young adult males. It's one of the reasons why our ministry to young people in our church is so important, and I honour the great work that our Scouts group and Untitled Youth and our dudes are doing at the moment, where there's older, positive male role models. It's so important that every young person gets to experience this in their life as they grow and develop. Now, the second stage, as we move on, is what Rohr calls the crisis of limitations. And this is as a man reaches his middle age and he's confronted with his own limitations. And they're often limitations imposed on him by his life circumstances. The career ascent often stalls at this stage. And the work that he does becomes a bit of a grind. The demands of family life press in. And all of these things mean his capacity to achieve is somewhat diminished compared to what it was previously. The man also has an increasing awareness of his own physical limitations as he ages. It's a stage of life where, by that stage of life, the man will have experienced some sort of crisis of faith in some way, whether it's through a loss of a loved one or some other similar crisis, where he's confronted with his own mortality in a very deep and real way. Now, instead of an ascent, this journey often feels like it's a descent. The heroic virtues that once seemed to work, they don't work anymore. And there's this question that starts to nag deep within, and it's a question that haunts most men, and it's this. Is this all there is? Is this all there is? But a man who navigates this crisis of limitations, a one who is able to do it well, is one who understands that this journey of descent is actually a necessary and important part of one's spiritual journey, because this descent is also a movement towards greater selflessness. where the question that is asked is no longer around how can I be successful, but it's much more about how is what I'm doing significant to others. So instead of success, it's significance. It's no longer about independence, but it's much more about dependence on God. The healthy descent is where one starts to truly recognize that it's not me in control, but God. And what emerges in the man as he embraces the descent is a beautiful humility and honesty, a man who is aware of his own limitations, a man who knows more than ever he not just needs to follow the ways of Jesus, but he needs to be present with Jesus. He needs to be meeting with Jesus and encountering him every day. Now, there's also an unfortunate alternative to the man who navigates this crisis of limitation well. And that is the man who thinks he can keep on ascending. The man who avoids this invitation to descend. The man who thinks he can keep on ascending, keeps on going after what he thinks is going to bring him success. It might be the new car or the boat. It might be the newer and bigger house. It might be the new wife, whatever it is. It's what we've come to recognize as the midlife crisis. And this man becomes shallow. He becomes soulless. He becomes unhappy. His life is without meaning. And as he gets older, this pursuit of newer, bigger, better, and younger just becomes more and more embarrassing to observe. And that man just becomes an old fool. And finally, we have the third stage, the wisdom journey. And in this stage, there's this necessary messiness of life. There's loose ends that will never be fully tied. There might be some regrets. There might be some questions around what if, but there's also an acceptance. Because the wisdom journey is a time of letting go. It's about trust, about patience, about surrender. It's about a holy abandonment. It's a return to simplicity. The man is now more of a gardener than he is a builder. It's a place that's beyond judgments. It's a place of reason and calmness. It's the place of wisdom. The man navigating this wisdom journey well recognizes who he is and he recognizes who God is. He doesn't need to fake prayer because his prayers are genuine and heartfelt. They come from a place very deep within. The man also knows and he's come to recognize his shadow side, his brokenness that has come out at times, and he can think about those moments when that brokenness has just come out and it's impacted on those that he loves. But the wounds now have become sacred wounds. The man not only tolerates his shadow side, he forgives himself for it. And he embraces it for what it is, which is a gift. Because without the shadow side, there's no forgiveness and there's no mercy. You see, the wisdom journey is about just being human again. It's about slowing down. It's about soaking it in. It's about appreciating what one has been given. The wisdom journey is about the man's self-image no longer being about his role, his reputation, his power, his prestige, or his position. Because the man on the wisdom journey, the man who navigates this well, knows more than ever before that he is God's precious child. And he's at a place where finally God is in control. But some men don't navigate the wisdom journey well. Their wounds don't become sacred wounds. Instead, they look for something, someone, anyone to blame for the pain. They become negative. They become cynical. Their world gets smaller and smaller. No one really likes to spend time with this person. His family and his loved ones at best will put up with and tolerate him because he has become an embittered old man. But a man on the wisdom journey, he finds that place of abandonment and surrender where he realizes that not only is he following the ways of Jesus, not only is he meeting with Jesus each and every day and encountering with him, but now the presence of Jesus is glowing through him. This is a man who has become a man of love, a man of peace, and a man of holiness. This is a man who will one day say, like Paul, I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. And as the finish line gets closer, this is a man who is running to the line. Not limping, not walking, not disqualified. He is running, like Paul is running as he writes these words, running into the arms of Jesus.